everybody, and the top of the morning to you. Kelly, happy St. Patrick's Day, man.
Happy St. Patrick's Day. I can't believe it's March already.
Yeah, no kidding. Are you Irish at all? You have an Irish name.
Yeah, Kelly Shores is kind of Irish sounding. I had a crush on a girl in like fifth grade named Shannon O'Brien.
You'll
get more Irish sounding than that. And then funny enough, my grandmother doesn't see very well, and she lives in Kansas City. And she kept telling me about this Irish quarterback that they had for the Kansas City Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes. And I said, I don't know, Grandma. You might want to check that. And you know, full disclosure, actually, we're recording this the day before the Super Bowl, so we don't actually know who won. It's not actually St. Patrick's Day. So hopefully that Irishman, Patrick Mahomes, had some lucky charms when he won the Super Bowl.
You didn't answer my question.
Am I Irish?
Are you Irish?
No.
Are you Irish? You're not Irish.
Nine hootie.
I did the DNA test.
Oh yeah? What's I thought you were a Texan. I thought you were Milam and Rusk. If you're ever at the corner of Milam and Rusk.
I'm 14% Irish.
14%. So was this 23andMe or was it
Ancestry.com.
Ancestry. Okay. You spit into a cup?
Yep.
Huh.
And mostly
I don't actually believe they do anything with that spit. I think they just send you back sort of a random random thing.
Yeah, but it couldn't be too random because I mean, they don't have a picture of me or anything.
Dude, it's all over the internet. You're famous.
Oh, okay. That's true. That's true. So you think based on what I look like, they got like, this guy's looks like he burns when he's in the sun.
Right. He looks a little red.
Pasty.
Well, 14% Irish. So I definitely feel like you should be an expert on today's subject.
Yeah. So I thought maybe we could abandon our regular format of surprising each other and, as we've done on some of these other saints, let's see, what saints have we talked about?
St.
Valentine and St. Nicholas.
Mother Teresa.
I guess Mr. Rogers wasn't a saint. I mean,
he was saintly, but
he was a Lutheran minister, so that probably disqualifies him from being a Catholic saint.
Yeah, the Pope didn't recognize it.
But we do. And
Hashtag unrecognized saints.
Yeah. I think that's the only ones we've done, but we tend to like saints on this show. We tend to like to talk about who these people are. It's kind of fits in our wheelhouse of people you've heard about, but I guarantee nobody knows very, very many things that St. Patrick. This might be the oldest person that we've done, too. I don't think we've done anybody older than this, right?
Yeah, we're going to have to get into cavemen and stuff if we're going to do
much older than this.
Nostradamus?
No, because that was the 1500s, I think.
Oh, okay.
I have to go listen to the show
again. Yeah, I've kind of forgotten on that one. Yeah, when was St. Patrick born? Like 300, 400 AD or something?
432 is the best guess
okay.
that they have of this.
Yeah, and it was you know, like... October 4th, 432, at 6 p.m.
They think it's about the 5th century as well as they can do. In fact, he's so old, and this would be St. Patrick we're talking about, or as they say in Ireland, Patrick. He's the primary saint of Ireland, but he's so old that he was never actually canonized because he lived before the canonization laws. They still consider him a saint, but he didn't have to jump through all the saintly hoops that somebody like a Mother Teresa would have to jump through.
Right, right. Yeah, he kind of grandfathered that. He was grandfathered right in.
He was the grandfather.
Yeah, the OS, the original saint.
So because it was such a long time ago, you know, the stories that we're going to be talking about today are sometimes thought of as maybe more parables or myths or kind of supernatural tales or something when they've been passed down so much. We don't know if any of this stuff has really happened, but we're going to talk about mostly the types of things that he's attributed to doing and then kind of the legacy that he leaves. You know, he was first and foremost, they say that he brought Christianity to Ireland.
Right. But one thing that I think a lot of people debate about is where he was actually born, right? Because
English fellow, wasn't he?
Well, some say English, some say Welsh, which I guess is technically English. I don't know.
But he definitely wasn't Irish.
No, not necessarily Irish. Some even say he was born in Scotland.
Right. But, you know, when he was 16, he was captured by from Britain, Britain.
Slave traders, know. Right?
Irish pirates, yeah.
Irish pirates.
Taken as a slave to Ireland. And you'd think that once you did that, you wouldn't be a Irish fan.
Right.
But he went over there as a slave and he was an animal herder.
Right.
But he actually escaped.
Yeah. And I think he actually later in life said that kidnapping was something that he was almost glad happened because it was his penance for sins that he had committed. You know, prior and the sin of not being dedicated to God prior to that.
Yeah, and I think that kind of repeats itself in the stories that St. Patrick had about if you don't repent or if this doesn't happen, then bad things are going to happen to you. A lot of those stories have to do with that. But yeah, he escaped. I think he just got on went on to a ship and then went home. Right,
kind of like Napoleon.
Yeah, became a deeply religious man and became a cleric later in life, went back to Ireland to then spread Christianity to this place that he had suffered so much. Now, I don't know how long he was taken when he was 16. I don't know. Was that a couple of years? Do you know?
Yeah, I think they said it was around 6 years. You know, he stayed there as a prisoner. For about 6 years, so maybe from 16 to, say, 22, 23, jeez, early 20s. And then
– those are formative years, wouldn't you think?
Yeah.
To be a slave?
Yeah, I mean, and you wonder, you know, when you think of slavery, at least in the United States, we have this vision of slavery as it occurred here, right, which was horrible and brutal. I imagine getting kidnapped by pirates is not a pleasant experience, but you also wonder if you know, if he did come to love and appreciate Ireland during that time, because it was such an impressionable time of his life.
Hmm. Yeah. Now, originally, the only thing I knew about St. Patrick going into this that I had always been told as a kid was that he was responsible for there being no snakes in Ireland.
Right.
Have you ever heard that story?
I have heard that story. As a matter of fact, I heard that that because he brought Christianity to Ireland, the snakes were chased away, you know, as sort of a reward from God. But a lot of scientists say that there were no snakes in Ireland, that it was too cold of an environment, and that they didn't all just swim out into the sea, you know, banished into the ocean, slithering down from the mountains and such. But really, what is interesting about that is, if you think about it, you know, in the Bible, the snake or the serpent is more of a symbol for evil, right? Evil people, evil thoughts, evil motives. And, you know, the snake's the one that tempted Adam and Eve. So if you think about snakes more metaphorically, when everybody became Christian, they chased away the evil in the country.
Yeah, that's a more economical story for sure. The story goes that he was fasting on a mountain, right? And that the snakes attacked him and then he chased them into the sea. But then there's also a story that the same story, but there was demonic birds. Have you ever heard that story?
No.
He banished them into the sea.
And didn't birds evolve from snakes or from reptiles?
So, oh, that's true. And this was a long time ago, so maybe that happened. But he ended his – he was fasting on the mountain, and they say that he ended his fast when God let him be the judge all the Irish. So if you're Irish and you die, you go to heaven, and St. Patrick's the one that judges you. And So there was like this negotiation that he had. I'll end my fast if you let me judge all the Irish and also spare Ireland from all the stuff that's in Revelation.
All the horrible endings.
Right. So that was the deal, that he'd end his fast if he would let him judge and spare Ireland of the final, they call it the final desolation, the part of Revelations. What do you think of that? So if you're Irish, you're good.
Yeah, I mean, I guess maybe if we want to escape that, it means maybe we need to move to Ireland, right? Now, did you hear anything about his name? Like that Patrick was actually not his original name?
No, but I heard something about the two Patrick theory. You know about anything that there were two St. Patricks? A lot of this stuff gets real murky when it comes to, because again, this was a long time ago.
Right.
What was his name? Dave?
Maewen Sakant. It's a very unusual name. But here's where Patrick supposedly comes from. And I did not actually verify if this is true or not. But according to the interwebs, Patricus, or maybe it's Patricus, or because patriarch, right? That's sort of a father, right? So Patricus is Latin for nobleman. And so...
Okay.
Or father figure can also be Latin for father figure. So that actually was how he came to be called. Patrick was, that's the Americanized version of Patricus.
Mm. And like I say, in Ireland, their name is Padraig.
Padraig. Sure. All variations on the original Latin roots though, right? Because if you think about English as a Latin-based language, then that would sort of make sense that, you know, again, patriarchal, all those kind of things indicate father and noble. And so, yeah, that's supposedly where the name came from.
So that was like his clerical name, his religious name, right?
Maybe it was kind of like his Irish name. You know, I guess, you know how sometimes when like
Gaelic.
Chinese or Korean people move to the United States, their real name is one thing and then they have an American name. You know, maybe it was kind of like that, you know, or when you call tech support and someone with a very thick Indian accent says, "Hello, this is Bob. How can I help you?" Mm-hmm. It you know, similar kind of thing. It was the way he fit into the Irish society by having an Irish name. I mean, because nobody's going to want to call him Maewen. St. Maewen. That doesn't sound nearly as good.
Yeah. I suppose that's true. So you think that was why he changed it? Because later on he knew he'd be a saint and he would want to, it would just sound better to Americans?
I think, yes. Sound better to Americans. That's kind of why everybody does everything, right? It's got to please the people in the great country of USA America,
which wasn't a thing back then.
Right.
The thing about St. Patrick is that to me it's just all these stories that come out, the stories of things that it wasn't like a biography of a life that you could read about necessarily. They were just kind of interspersing these stories, like I say, that are myths. Do you have any concrete stuff about his actual kind of life that don't involve these stories? Because I'm just full of the stories.
Well, I do know that he supposedly, and this was written by himself, talked to angels and God and had, you know, God's the one that actually told him to escape from Ireland by boat. He was visited by an angel because while he was there in Ireland as a teenager, he prayed a lot and he grew his faith. And he said that holy voices guided him. One told him to escape from Ireland by boat. One actually is the one that told him to go back to Ireland and bring Christianity to the people who had enslaved him for all those years. He also supposedly raised the dead. Did you know about that?
No.
Well, in order to become a saint, and again, you know, we talked about him being grandfathered in, you have to perform miracles. Well, supposedly he performed a miracle of feeding hungry sailors by miraculously making a herd of pigs appear on the shore for them to eat. And then supposedly he actually raised 33 different men from the dead, and some of them had been dead for a very long time. So very, very, some pretty intense miracles he produced.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So even if we were playing by today's rules, the canonization, he certainly exceeds that standard, right?
However, these accounts come from his own writings. So independent verification was not a thing in this case.
Wow. So you're claiming that a person could lie about things and then be a saint.
Well, if they were around in like 400 AD, they could, or 500 AD.
That's exactly the kind of person you wouldn't want to be a saint, the kind that would lie about it.
But I don't see any reason to believe that he did lie. You know, I mean, it's who knows whether he told the truth or not. But he wrote that, you know, in his writings, he refers to raising 33 different people from the dead and
self-report
and feeding, you know, feeding the hungry, much like Jesus with the loaves and fishes.
Do you know about Dyre? Have you heard the story about Dyre?
No.
So Dyre was a chieftain. You like the band The Chieftains? There's an Irish band, huh? The Chieftains?
I don't know much about them, no.
Okay, they were pretty good.
Was Dyre their singer?
No. No, this was a long time ago. This is in the days of St. Patrick. And Dyre was a pagan chieftain. I guess a pagan is someone who's either not religious or not your religion, right?
I think actually pagan was its own thing, kind of like they worshiped, pagans worshiped nature, I think.
Yeah, that's what I mean by not religious, not in the traditional sense, right? That they were grounded into nature.
Yeah, and if you think about it, you know, if you think about like Celtic symbolism and the symbolism of sort of that region before Christians, it was very, very pagan, right? It was a lot of things that were almost like Native American symbolism.
Sure. But whenever you hear about pagans, it's usually in opposition to religion, right? The pagans, like in Rome, they didn't like the religious part, right? So this pagan chieftain, so he was the boss, he wouldn't let St. Patrick wanted to build a church up on this hill. And the chieftain named Dyre wouldn't let him do that. So all of a sudden, Dyre's horse was out there grazing on the land that he did give him for his church, and all of a sudden Dyre's horses die.
Oh, wow.
So Dyre tells his thugs, his men to go kill St. Patrick, and they're getting ready to go and kill him, and all of a sudden Dyre struck with illness. Right? Oh. So and they begged, the men went over to St. Patrick and they begged him to heal Dyre with holy water. And so he's like, all right, well, I'll do this. But, you know, just remember, you know, you didn't let me build that church up there. So he heals them with the holy water. And then Dyre and the horses, Dyre is saved. And then the horses come back to life.
Okay. So that sort of tracks with the story about him raising the dead.
Just that whole idea of if you do this, then this will happen.
Right.
Dyre rewarded him with a bronze cauldron and gave him the hill to build the church. And that church became the head church of Ireland.
Okay.
But that whole idea of, you know, if you cross me, bad things will happen. But if you are nice to me, good things will happen. There's also a story about, it's a similar story about Crumdove, a guy named Crumdove. And with bulls. So they sent the bull to kill St. Patrick. Crumdove was a chieftain. He sent the bulls to go kill St. Patrick. But the bull, upon seeing St. Patrick, just like stops and lets itself be eaten.
Wow.
Crumdove demanded that they return the bull. So St. Patrick brings the bull back to life without the meat, just the bones and the skin, just brings it back to life. And then one telling of the story, Crumdove convert, like, is so impressed that he converts to Christianity. And then the other tale, Crumdove gets eaten by the bull.
So there's a lot of variation.
I like both of those endings. Like one of them, he's so impressed that he's like, St. Patrick, you're the best. I'm going to convert, save my life. And then the other story is the bull, the skin and bones bull, eats Crumb Dove.
Well, first of all, what kind of a name is Crumb Dove, right?
I mean, it's cool. It's C-R-O-M-D-U-B-H.
Okay.
Like Crumb Dove.
Yeah.
But it's pronounced Crumb Dove.
And it's the other name. One was Dire, the other
Dire, yeah. D-A-I-R-E.
The king of
Dire.
The pagans, or the chieftain of the pagans.
Yeah, those are great names. Crumb Dove and Dire.
Yeah, and I kind of wonder, like a chief of a sort of religious movement, you know, if you call the paganism a religious movement, I wonder if he was called Holy Dire.
Oh, there you go. Yeah,
like the Dire. Ronnie James Dio song.
Yeah, I was listening to that this morning.
Yeah, rocking out with some Dio.
Did you ever hear the innkeeper story?
No, this is new to me as well.
This kind of reminds me of the kind of the St. Nicholas kind of stuff, you know, where he goes.
Yeah, like raising the kids from the dead.
Just kind of goes around. What are those guys like on patrol when they just say they just went into an inn? What does that mean? Like they just walked in.
Yeah.
He went into the inn and he watched.
I'm here to inspect
innkeeper.
This inn.
Yeah, just to see how religious you are around here. And the innkeeper was pretty nasty, not great customer service going on. Wasn't very generous.
Two stars on Yelp.
Exactly. And St. Patrick was not impressed with the innkeeper, and he told her that a demon was living in their cellar, and that every time she was dishonest or rude to her guests, the demon would get fatter.
Well, I mean, wouldn't you want to make
fat.
It would be not less
fat, like unhealthy, just fat, oh, okay. like maybe in his powers, right? Like
bigger, bigger.
I mean, I think he used the word.
P-H-A-T.
Maybe. I think he used the word fatter, but the implication is if a demon gets fatter, it's getting bigger and his powers are getting bigger.
I'm just imagining like a Jabba the Hutt kind of demon down there going,
oh, yeah.
Oh, keep being ruled. I am growing large with food and with your hatred.
Yeah, that's true. Maybe. I don't know. But he told her the only way to get rid of that demon in the cellar was to change her ways and become more customer service oriented.
That does sound like a Yelp review.
Yeah, he didn't probably use the word customer service, but who knows?
Yeah.
So later, years later, he went back to visit the innkeeper, and turns out she had changed her way. She was serving whiskey to all the guests.
Oh.
And he went into the cellar, and the demon was dying. And then upon seeing St. Patrick, he bolted out in a flash. And so because of this, St. Patrick decrees that people should have a whiskey in his memory on St. Patrick's Day.
Oh.
And this is called drowning the shamrock. And in some cases on St. Patrick's Day, you actually take a shamrock, the flower.
Yep.
And you put it in your whiskey or your beer or your cider, and you drink it, and then when you get to the shamrock, you either swallow it or you throw it over your shoulder for good luck.
This is like the worm in mezcal, right?
Yeah, exactly. Less intense option. It's just a little. If you accidentally swallow, it's just like swallowing a leaf.
Or the baby in a king cake.
Yeah, exactly. Which is much more trouble if you actually.
Yeah, that's gonna hurt going through. A shamrock would be okay. Well, interestingly. They call that drowning the shamrock.
Yeah.
Because what's interesting about that is, do you know kind of why the shamrock is associated with St. Patrick's Day?
Does it have something to do with the three leaves and the Holy Trinity?
Yeah. It's supposedly that was one of St. Patrick's big metaphors that he liked to use was the Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. You can have they are the same in one thing, and yet they're separate because they're different parts of the same thing. So it seems kind of disrespectful religiously to put it into whiskey.
But isn't shamrock basically clover?
Yeah. I think shamrock and clover are the same thing.
And clover is just a weed, right?
Well, you don't smoke it or anything like that. But
I just mean it's something you would see just out in the wild. It's not.
I guess
some
it's legal
kind of
in
exotic,
Ireland.
It's not like an exotic plant, right?
It's just no. It's everywhere. In, absolutely,
it's everywhere.
It grows in Texas.
And then there is a special four leaf every now and then. You would have a four leaf variety, which is very rare, but you could come across a four leaf clover.
And it's lucky.
Lucky, right. Irish are all about luck.
You know, just a little bit of an aside, a little bit about me that nobody's going to care about, but I'll tell the story anyway. I kind of perfected this thing as a kid where I could take, pick a clover or a shamrock, and I could pick another one. And I could sort of hold them together, you know, break three leaves off of one of them and then hold it behind the one with the three leaves. And so one has one leaf and the other has three leaves. And it would look like a four-leaf clover. Like I could hold it up in such a way that little sleight of hand.
Trick people?
Yeah, I was actually on a variety show. Then this is my magic trick that I would do.
Yeah, nice.
I found a four-leaf clover.
But that was your thing, huh?
That was not my only, that was a very minor thing but it's something I actually remember. And I think I've even done it to my kids. Like, I think I've, you know, picked it up in such a way that it looks like four leaf clover. But I want to know, Alex, if you remember all of the, cause I know we're kind of going on a little bit of a tangent here, but, the marshmallows in Lucky Charms.
Since we're talking about luck, you mean?
Yeah, and Irish and all that.
Pink hearts.
Yes.
Yellow moons.
Yes.
Orange stars.
Yes.
Blue diamonds.
Yes.
And I'm missing the one before blue diamonds.
Let's green see, leaves. Hearts,
yellow moons, orange stars, green clovers.
Oh, green clovers, yes.
And blue diamonds.
Blue diamonds. Interestingly, there are actually not just Lucky Charms, the cereal. There are actually seven Lucky Charms that are supposed to actually bring you good luck. And they're nothing to do with those things. It's the ladybug, the four-leaf clover, a horseshoe, a rabbit's foot, the thrush. I'm not sure what that is. The number 13, and then certain stones.
So the 13 is supposed to be lucky.
Yeah.
Hmm. But that has nothing to do with the cereal.
It has nothing to do with this episode, so.
Oh. Have you ever been to Ireland?
I have not. I really want to go. I've been to England a few times, but I've never been to Ireland. Have you been there?
Yes. Yes. I was lucky enough to go to Ireland with a buddy of mine for about 4 days.
Yeah.
And we did not leave the Dublin area at all.
I did
because I thought someday I want to come back with my wife and do all the, you know, seeing the beautiful countryside. I made a point to not do any of that and just stayed in that area called
Temple Bar.
Stayed
in a pub the whole time.
There was 250 pubs within walking distance of the hotel.
Wow. Wow.
And there's a lot of drinking in that culture.
Yeah.
There's a lot of drinking, and they drink pretty much only three things.
Guinness.
They drink Guinness, Jameson whiskey. Yeah. And not just any whiskey. It was like Guinness, Jameson whiskey, and cider.
Cider, I was going to say. Yeah. As a matter of fact, I was kind of looking at, in preparing for this, I was looking at sort of some of the most popular Irish beers. Of course, they're stout. Guinness is a stout, right? But actually, from what I understand, or according to the internet, Murphy's Irish Stout is more popular in Ireland than Guinness. Now, I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, I mean, I was only in Dublin, so you might be right. I was only in just a small area of town, but it was a
lot
of Guinness.
Were you there for business or just
yes,
like a...
but I was there for an academic conference. But a friend of mine went with me, and it was just the two of us basically, just tooling around getting in trouble. And we did get in trouble. We went to parts of the country where people were telling us, you shouldn't be here. You
really?
This is a rough place. You shouldn't be here. And it all, It all went wrong a bunch of times, but it was nonetheless, it was fun. Almost got into a couple of fights. Very aggressive folks we would encounter at times, but
probably drunk, you know,
seemed like everybody was on the edge of, you know how Boston is kind of has that vibe. Like everyone's on the edge of fighting you all the
very
time.
Very Irish.
Yeah.
Did you ever read the book? Did you ever read the book Angela's Ashes?
No.
It is really a testament to why people in Ireland might seem pissed off, because it's a very sad and tragic. Just everything that can happen to these people keeps happening to them over and over again.
Yeah. But also very funny. Like even when things were really getting dire for us, there was always somebody with a joke, or always somebody with, even when somebody's threatened to kick your ass, they would say it in such an amusing little way that you'd want to.
And yeah, you'd laugh at them, and that would just diffuse the whole situation. You'd point and laugh, and they'd go, "Ah, you seem like a good bloke, laddie."
They'd say something to you, and you'd think, "Are you telling the truth?" And they'd say, "No, I'm just taking a piss. I was just taking a piss."
Is it taking a piss or taking the piss out of you?
No, I was just taking a piss.
Huh.
And then if you rude.
If you drink too much, that's getting pissed, right?
Yes. If you drink too much.
So like here, if you ask somebody if they're pissed, that means they're angry. But over there, if you ask somebody if they're pissed, it means they're drunk. Yeah.
And there were also,
if you're
like
pissed and pissed.
There were hand signals that weren't going well for me. It was a lot of cultural missteps.
What year was this?
About 2006, I think. Okay. 2007, something.
You were a bit more of a wild card back then, I think.
Yeah. Well, I would hold up two fingers to order two beers, and apparently if you face your palm towards them, it's like giving them the middle finger. You'd
really?
Have to face two. If you wanted two, you have to face the back of your hand
two,
to
you
them.
You did two with constantly, like, almost like a peace sign.
And people would be grabbing my hand and say, "Don't do that."
Yeah.
There were constantly people were telling us, "Don't do that. Don't go here.
Don't go there.
Don't say that. don't say this."
You're making it sound a lot less fun.
It was just a cultural landmine in a place where I thought, "Oh, I'd go there. Everybody basically looks like me, and I'll be fine." You know, and I went there, and it was a lot of people that looked like me wearing tracksuits, wanting trouble. No, it was awesome. It was a great time. I had a lot of fun. It was just I remember it as being constantly like saying the wrong thing and doing the wrong thing. It's a lot different than, say, going to the UK
or Cleveland, right?
You know, but, and maybe because of the thought that I'm part Irish, I think I thought I was more Irish than 14% when I went. But, you know, when you think about the Irish diaspora, right, the people around the world that are Irish, do you know or where those people live? Like, do you know where Irish people live now?
Boston.
Sure. A lot of people in Boston. I mean, what about outside the U.S.?
I don't know. I don't know where else there are big concentrations of Irish.
Well, they say in the U.K., about 10% of the British population has an Irish grandparent. And there was a lot of immigration.
Well, that's not surprising.
Yeah. There's about 900,000 people in the U.K. that were born in Ireland. They were born in Ireland. But you know, there's a lot of stuff going on between those two countries. You know what they called the wars in the 70s, 80s, and 90s between England and Ireland?
I've heard this before, but I don't remember.
Called the Troubles.
The Troubles. That sounds like a pitch. That sounds like a pitch from Satchel Paige.
But this is, again, when you go there, everything seems like it's sanitized. Like they're calling this horrible war the Troubles. You see about a car bombing, but it's in Limerick. So you think, oh, that's cute. But, you know, when I think our Uber driver told us that Limerick, he was saying it was a pretty rough place. He said that Limerick is basically if you put a dome over Limerick, you should put a dome over Limerick and it would be the largest jail in the world or something. Like those are all the criminals are.
But I do think the English tend to downplay, you know, they have that sort of chin up mentality. So they downplay things. So for example, like you said, the Troubles, a very non or understated way of putting it. They also often refer to the ocean as across the pond or, you know, so, yeah, sure. So they're, again, they're just saying, it's just a pond, you know, they understate things because they want to carry on.
Yeah, certainly. Well, the Troubles were pretty bad. In fact, there, you know, you weren't allowed to celebrate St. Patrick's Day in the UK in the 70s. There was a lot of car bombs. You know, they still have family feuds over there. You'd still have family feuds between like the McGillicuddies and the McCoys. And it just seems so like funny or something to us, but those are serious. Like they involve like murder and bombs and a lot of bad stuff.
So now weren't the Troubles in Ireland with Northern Ireland and mm-hmm. it's divided into two countries, right? It's Northern Ireland and just Ireland or the Republic of Ireland.
Well, Northern Ireland is part of the United Kingdom. So it's part of they're under the reign of the queen at the time, the king. It's part of the United Kingdom. And those people are Protestants and right. they voted to, you know, they basically are staying with the UK. The other part, the part that we know as the Republic of Ireland, is a predominantly Catholic part, they want all of Ireland to be its own country, and the battle between loyalists and Republicans is pretty fierce and has been fierce, and it's cooled a little now.
Yeah, I was going to say, hasn't that calmed down?
That was 1998 is when they had those treaties. So really yeah. Hasn't been that long, 25 years or so of peace.
So on the island, there are two different countries, Northern Ireland and the Republic of Ireland.
Well, really one country, because Northern Ireland's part of Great Britain.
But it's not
its own country.
Oh, it's not. It's actually Great Britain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Huh. I actually didn't know that.
Yeah, they don't have like a
so it would be minister. It would be like Canada or Iceland taking over a little part of the United States, and
it's
and
like kind of well like yeah sure.
No, I could see why it would tick off the Republic people.
Yeah, in fact, one of the mistakes that we did was we were going to a rugby match, and it was cold, and my friend had bought a scarf to wear at the rugby match.
Wrong color.
It had like the Irish flag. And then like, have you ever seen the Notre Dame logo, like the Fighting Irish guy?
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
So it had that with an Irish flag. And we went into a bar, and the bar was not a Republican bar. It was like, even though it was in Dublin, it was apparently that's a very like politically heated thing to do, to just like roll up with that. And
yeah, it's like wearing a Hillary Clinton campaign shirt in Mississippi.
More like a Confederate flag. But we were in what we would call like the South. So we thought we didn't even know. First of all, we were just ignorant to any of that. And people would come up to us and go, "Hey, are you Republican?" And we're like, "What? What are you doing?" And they're like, the scarf, what's the story with the scarf? And they'd be like, if you don't want trouble, you take the scarf off around here. And just things like that. We're just so stupid.
Were they a little bit more tolerant when they heard you were American?
Yeah. We're like, I'm from Texas. Everywhere we went, we're like, we're from Texas.
And then did they sort of give you a pass? Because of that.
I think probably. I mean, we didn't ultimately get in any fights. We just almost got in a lot of fights. And we're not fighters. We're lovers, you know.
Well, St. Patrick was also a lover, I think, right?
Yeah, sure. Well, you know, the Irish Rebellion goes back to the 1600s, the 1641, when they were the Catholics were being discriminated against, and what would happen was the England would send people to the rebels to the New World, America, right? As indentured servants.
Right.
And so that's why we have a lot of Irish here. They came as indentured servants. Between that and the famine, the population of Ireland fell from like 1.5 million to 600,000. So like almost by a third between 1641 and 1652. Just in 11 years, the population went down by like a third. It was a big famine. People weren't eating. So there's a lot of Americans now here because people got sent there as indentured servants, 400 years ago. You know where else there's a lot of Irish people, though, is Argentina.
Huh.
In fact, they say like 15% of the population in Argentina is Irish. And they have big St. Patrick's Day parade. And Canada, of course. Canada, about 14% of Canadians are Irish. In fact, in Newfoundland, about 80% of Newfoundland are Irish people.
Really? Okay.
They settled Newfoundland. They say Newfies. That Newfoundland's the most Irish place in the world outside of Ireland. You've been there, right?
I've been to Halifax, but Newfoundland is a little further than that. So, yeah.
In fact, the hockey team, the Toronto Maple Leafs, they used to be called the Toronto St. Patrick's, like in the 20s.
Oh, I did not know that.
That's how Irish Canada is, really.
Well, so you were talking about the drop in population of Ireland. Ireland today is only 5 million people.
Yeah.
And so you have fewer people in Ireland than you do in the Houston metro area.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah, it really is. It really is an entire.
And that excludes the two, the biggest city, Dublin, right? Which has probably got, I don't know how many people are in Dublin, but probably 1 million maybe.
Yeah.
And everybody else is maybe bigger. I don't know. Everyone else is kind of spread out. Yeah.
Well, so for St. Patrick's Day, there's a couple of things people do. They drink green beer. They wear green, right? And I think the green connection, as far as I could tell, was just having to do with how the country looks, right? Ireland is a very green the Emerald Isle, very green place with the not a lot of, at least from the pictures I've seen, and maybe you could say this, were there a lot of trees around Dublin or was it like more grassy kind of fields?
I mean, again, I was only in the city, but flying over it, very green, beautiful, dramatic coastlines. Yeah, very. Yeah. They get a lot of rain.
Yep. They get a lot of rain, so everything stays really green. And I believe that the native language is Gaelic. Is that right?
I think officially, but you don't find a lot of people speaking it, at least in the city.
Right. But it's historically, it kind of goes back. Yeah. I know that the way you say, or I've learned that the way you say Happy St. Patrick's Day in Gaelic is Lola Pandrick Sona Duet. Lola Pandrick Sonia Duet.
And there are still words that, like, their prime minister isn't called the prime minister, it's called the Tisha.
Tisha.
Tisha is spelled, not like you'd expect it to.
Not like Tisha. There's Tisha and Tisha.
You mentioned the green beer. Do you know what they do in Chicago for St. No. Patrick's Day?
No.
They make the Chicago River green. They dump all kinds of food coloring and whatnot into the whole river. Chicago River is green.
Wow.
That
sounds unhealthy.
Yeah, and the largest St. Patrick's Day in the world is in New York City. You know why they picked March 17th as St. Patrick's Day?
Well, because that's the day St. Patrick died and went to heaven.
Is that true?
I doubt they know what day he died. No, why did they? So hold on. And let's just back up a minute about St. Patrick's Day. I kind of under the impression that it was more of an American thing initially with St. It was more of a religious festival in Ireland, and it became more of a cultural drinking celebration kind of festival in the U.S. because there were so many Irish people here. And then that sort of spread to the rest of the world. Is that your understanding as well?
I don't know. It's hard to tell. It's not a holiday here, right? It's not like we get the day off, right? It's like you say, it's more like a, it's bigger than Cinco de Mayo, but not as big as like, you know, New Year's, right?
Sure.
So it's definitely a party. The thing about St. Patrick's Day, it comes at a great time in our calendar. It's usually kind of during spring break, right? In fact, they picked March 17th because it's the middle day of spring in Ireland.
Ah, okay. So that's more of a pagan thing.
I'm guessing Ireland, spring doesn't last very long though. It's probably like March 1st, March 30th or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
March 1st to April 1st, March 17th, right in the middle. Okay. I don't think spring is really that long. I don't know, but they celebrate this all over, you know, in Sydney Opera House is lit up in green. And the other thing that's interesting about St. Patrick's Day is it falls during Lent, right? A lot of Lenten traditions, you can't drink alcohol. They waive that for St. Patrick's Day, where you're allowed to drink alcohol during St. Patrick's Day and eat corned beef. And so if you're abstaining from meat and alcohol that day, you kind of, it's like a, and if it falls during Lent, when some days it does, some years it does, and some years it doesn't, I think, you don't have to, you know, have to do
that.
You
don't have to abstain. Interesting. I actually heard something kind of interesting this year, which will have already passed when this episode airs. But in 2024, Ash Wednesday falls on Valentine's Day.
Oh, it did, you mean? Yeah, it already did.
Yeah, it already did.
A month ago.
Fell on Ash Wednesday. So get your lover a little ash heart.
Or a shamrock shake. Did you know, and those are good, by the way. Have you ever had a shamrock shake?
No, where do you get them?
McDonald's. The green minty shakes. Excellent.
I got to try it.
I think you're onto something, though, with it being kind of an American holiday. In fact, it's customary for the Irish Prime Minister, or the Taoiseach, to meet with the U.S. president either on or around St. Patrick's Day every year. Did you know that? That's like a tradition?
I did not know that.
Either our president goes there or they come here, but it's a very special holiday for us, I think, in that it must mean a lot to us, in that the prime minister always wants to spend time with the president for there. In fact, the tradition is that the prime minister of Ireland will present our president with a Waterford Crystal bowl filled with shamrocks. And this happens. I think it happened. Started with maybe Harry Truman, but I know Bill Clinton was doing it. I don't know the last few if they've done it, but that's kind of the tradition. Of course, St. Patrick's Day gets a little bit of a bad rap these days because of the kind of stereotypes of drunkenness. And kind of dressing like a leprechaun and getting drunk is kind of tacky.
Pinching people.
I forgot about that one. That's definitely tacky.
If they're not wearing green, they asked for it.
Oh, that's true. Some people say it demeans the Irish stereotype, and it has some harmful effects of perpetuating the Irish stereotype as people that, you know, aren't to be taken seriously or just drunks or whatever. There is a lot of drinking in Ireland, but I will say that I didn't see the drunkenness as much as like I see here. I mean, people, I think, can handle their alcohol, but they also know not to act like fools. I mean, they're always taking a piss and they're getting pissed, but I didn't see the amount of public drunkenness that I would see like in an evening out in Austin or Houston or something. So I think True. That's important to note, that maybe their drinking is a part of their culture, but I think they control themselves better, like a lot of European countries.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of, if you grow up with it, I guess, and you do it all the time, you can't really do it to his excess, or you don't feel it. I don't know. I don't want to oversimplify people's relationships with alcohol, but ultimately it's part of their culture, and they, like you said, they try to keep it under control despite doing it frequently.
You know what else I noticed was the role of the bartender over there seemed to be very different than the one here. The bartender's not there to hear your problems and not there to just like shoot the breeze with. The bartender was always busy stocking things and cutting things and just very professional and only there to really take your order. And then once that's done, they let you talk to your friends, but you're not there to just hang out with the bartender. That's not their role. In fact, a couple of times I try to strike up a conversation and he kind of gave me the vibe like, I'm not here to talk to you, really.
I'm not going to answer your questions, American, and take off that scarf. And you know, what's ironic about that? What's ironic about that is the fact that the hit television show Cheers was supposed to be an Irish bar in Boston, right? Mm-hmm. And that's all the bartenders did was talk to the customers, you know?
The other thing was the rugby match that I remember very well is that people did not move during that game. They would watch. They weren't up and down like you see in American sports. Once it was halftime, the entire stands emptied and everyone went to go get a shot of whiskey and to the bathroom and then back to their seats. And the whiskey, they just had a tent outside of the stadium, and it was like, I think it was like €1 or €5, but it was an amount where you just give them like a coin.
Right, no change being made.
No change. And it was very efficient. And there was probably 20,000 people at that thing, and everybody got out and back in and had like a shot of whiskey. And it was probably, I don't know, 40, 35 degrees or something like that. So it was cold. And it was just, I always was amazed at how efficient it was, and compared to American sports where there's just so much commotion in the stands where everyone's always getting up to get a beer, get a hot dog, or not paying attention to the game. I really liked that. I thought that was really cool.
So the drink of choice at a rugby match was whiskey, not beer?
Yeah, probably because it was cold. It was just like a big, there would be both. There was a Jameson tent, and then there was like a Guinness tent, and there might have been cider also being poured.
Was there a clover tent where you put your shamrock in the whiskey?
It was just so like efficient, and there were no seats. Like, you'd stand and there'd be a railing that I remember, and you weren't sitting. There wasn't even a place to sit. You'd just stand on a railing.
Huh.
And you know, and you could stand for 45 minutes, and then, you know, you'd have halftime and you stand for another 45 minutes, and then you go out to the pub.
Sounds like a good time. Yeah. Well, you've added to the places we need to visit.
Oh man, Dublin is a good time. But like I said, you got to pay attention, or you'll end up at the clock. I think the place was called The Clock, the pub that I went to, where people were telling me, we went in and a guy says, what's the story? And I said, what do you mean, what's the story? And apparently that's like how you say, what's up? So right away, I'm like, what do you mean, what's the story?
You said, what's my story? You said, an American, an Englishman, and an Irishman walk into a pub.
Oh man, it is rough. Yeah, it's a different place. Read up on it.
Yeah,
I don't know if Rick Steves can prepare you for what we have to
go through. WWRSD. What would Rick Steves do?
All right, man. Well, hopefully people learned a little bit about St. Patrick's, because that's exactly what we gave them, a little bit about
St. Patrick's, but a whole lot of Ireland.
But you know what? There's not a lot about St. Patrick out there. It's just a lot of guessing and a few miracles sprinkled.
He was a wee mythical lad, Paint
was
Patrick.
He wee?
He was.
He was actually wee.
He was pissed and he was wee.
All right, man. You got anything else?
That's all I got.
All right. Happy St. Patrick's Day, everybody.
Happy St. Patty's Day.
Drown the shamrock.
And guilt the lily. Oh.
I woke me up this morning and I heard a joyful song from the throats of happy Irishmen 100,000 strong. It was the Hibernian Brigade lining up for to start the big parade. So I grabbed the hat my father wore upon St. Patrick's Day, and I wore it tilted on the side the good old Irish way. And we all sang the wearing of the green, a finest sight I'm sure you've never seen. It's a great day for the Irish, it's a great day for fair. The sidewalks of New York are thick with blarney. You'd think that old New York was Kilkenny. It's a great day for the shamrock, for the flags in full array. We're feeling so inspirish because of all the Irish. It's a great...